National media continues to exaggerate and promote misleading negative headlines designed to diminish the rule of law and those whose job it is to enforce it. Remember, the only people who want to defund the police and dismantle these agencies are the criminals. And don't forget to thank a cop. Now, let's start the show. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We have a special guest today. We have Kirsten Engel and John Lovett, who's been around since forever, since 2016 when we started the show, actually. And we have our intern is here from the U of A. Alex is here. And we're going to talk about some of the things that are on your mind. I know you're running.
Yes.
Let's hear a little bit about you.
Thanks so much for having me this morning.
Thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about you, your background, and what makes you want to get into politics. It's oh my God, it's so hard.
Pretty crazy right now. So thanks again for having me. I'm a community member. I'm an educator. I first came here to Arizona 20 years ago to teach at the University of Arizona. Most of my career has actually been in the environment as an environmental attorney. But right before the show, we were just talking a little bit about my background, where I served for 5 years in the Massachusetts Attorney General's office. So I hope we can talk about that as well. I first got into politics in 2016. I hadn't thought about running for office before, but I was, experiencing at home with my daughter. I was actually seeing it at the university. The impacts of, really massive cuts here in Arizona to public education. So that's what motivated me to run. I come from a family, very community-oriented. My mother was a middle school teacher. My dad's a teacher. And, especially with education, super, super important. But they also instilled in me this ethic of, you see a problem, don't just whine about it and complain. Get up and do something about it.
Fix it.
Yeah, so I ran for the Arizona legislature, and I had experience in a broader spectrum of issues than the environment, though that has been my focus when I was in Massachusetts at the Attorney General's office. But it was a great experience working in that legislature, representing Midtown as well as Eastern Tucson, and working on everything from education to water to public safety to workforce development, really, really critical issue in our state. And, I got the bug, I guess. And when Ann Kirkpatrick decided to retire, there was such overlap between the legislative district that I represented in the legislature and this congressional district that I decided to run last time. In 2022, and I guess the rest is history. I ran and very narrowly lost that time, and I'm running again.
The problem isn't solved.
The problem is not solved, and I think not to throw any barbs out there, but there has been disappointment with my opponent, and I think the issues that I'm running on are still just as important as they were in 22, if not more. Reproductive rights, working on bringing down costs for families, protecting our environment, especially our water, working on issues of border security and immigration reform, and bringing back a sense of integrity to Congress and making it work for families working for Southern Arizona. It's really been a dysfunctional place there. I think that's some of the broadest agreement that we have right now.
Yeah, politics is very dysfunctional right now. What I was curious, on the TV, they have all these different ads. One of the ads says that you want to defund the police. And then the next ad is you're with our former, counter-narcotics officer saying, So what is your position on that?
I do not want to defund the police. I want to fund the police, and that is exactly what I did in the Arizona legislature, where I voted repeatedly to fund the police. The police are, the heart of our law enforcement, our local law enforcement. And I voted to support them, support their training, support our sheriff's office, our attorney general's office. That's very important. And that particular ad, it cuts me off. I was trying to bring attention to the need for law enforcement to be working with other agencies, such as agencies that bring mental health resources. A lot of the emergencies and even 911 calls that police are asked to respond to. And I know this from the numerous ride-alongs that I've done with police officers. You know, a lot of them are mental health crises.
Yes.
And we ask a tremendous amount of our police officers. And I've been blown away by that when I've spoken to them, visited with them, or been on those ride-alongs. Just the vast diversity of things that we're asking them to deal with, from violent crime to domestic violence to mental health issues to drug abuse. And, you know, let's not put it all on law enforcement. Let's also have other resources, behavioral health, mental health, to assist with what we're seeing in our community.
It's always fascinated me when I hear somebody, they call, they're having a mental health crisis, and somebody calls the police. Why are you not calling an ambulance? If they're having a mental health crisis, get a doctor. You don't need law enforcement. You need a doctor.
That is right. That is right. You know, we need to make sure that we are dispatching our resources in the most, the way that's actually going to address the problem.
Yes.
And that is, you know, most of the time it's been law enforcement, but we can't put that entire burden on them. So that was what I was trying to get at, probably not very artfully. I set myself up for, you know, some kind of ad agency to chop up my response.
Well, anytime anybody watches those ads and it's been chopped up and they have a person spouting out a word and here's a word. No, now we have a sentence and it's totally unrelated to anything that was originally said. So I don't think anybody takes any of those seriously. They're wasting their money. So, yeah, I know you two have done ads. How do you know each other?
Well, oddly, I have known, we've had friends in common for many, many years, and I've followed Kirsten's career and what she's done in the state legislature, and she's certainly been an ally to law enforcement and on the issues that are important to all of us. And so when she decided to run for the congressional seat, I had before been a big supporter of Gabby Giffords, and through that, mm-hmm. got to know something about the district and the jobs and the people and all the folks that are important. And so I investigated her, if you will, took a look on the internet, read about
as
her.
As every voter should.
And that, right. And in addition to that, talked to the people I know that know her. And
yes.
because of that, I thought that she would be the right person for us in Arizona. And that was before we ever actually met. First time we met was when we talked on the set of a commercial. Because really, I don't really have to, you know, go to dinner with, drink with, spend time with people if they've got a record. And she's got a record. And her record has been very pro.
Now, what kind of record are you talking about? You are law enforcement.
Hey, so she worked for the Massachusetts Attorney General. My daughter is an assistant attorney general in Arizona. I know what they do. I worked with those offices.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, they're really serious about this. I think the thing that people don't get is that because she doesn't stand there and scream liar all the time, that she is a bona fide candidate sometimes. I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are on the right, the far right, the extreme right, all of that's true. You know, I consider myself a centrist. I think she's a centrist. I think Gabby was a centrist.
Yeah.
And those
that's
are the
right.
kinds of candidates that I like and support. And this district
because
demands.
Because they can work with each other.
It demands that. So that's where I came to know about her campaign is actually becoming involved in looking into who the best candidates were. So we're very lucky to have people of her caliber run for these offices. You know, I can't even imagine what it's like to put yourself out there and have someone try to destroy everything you've ever done in your life. And think about the integrity of people who will put together an ad they know is deceptive and false by chopping up someone's words and taking the context from them.
We're going to do a whole show about that next week.
It's horrible. And so I guess, you know, what is that? Does that, I'm not saying the individual is responsible for it. I know he says, you know, I'm for this or I agree with this, but ultimately they are responsible for it. But the staff that puts that together, that is really deceitful, and it doesn't do anyone any good.
No, it's a disservice.
Right.
Total disservice.
You know, I think she's a great candidate, and so that's where I've certainly gone, and many of my friends and family have as well, for the same reasons.
And I've been very honored to, you know, be able to talk to John. We've talked at length about the fentanyl crisis, and, you know, these are things that, you know, people like me who are running for office really need to know the details on.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. She actually reached out and said, what about, I mean, I had a certain area of expertise for 40 years, and she asked me for that information.
Yes.
That's unusual, right?
Yeah.
That's very, because generally
she doesn't
people
know it all.
With the confidence to run for these offices are not looking for other people's ideas. They've got their own. And so it was refreshing to have someone actually spend an hour or so talking about the issues that are very important to me.
And how can we fix it?
And you know, you've done 25 shows with me on drugs.
At least.
It's important. Yeah, exactly. It's really important to me. That
well, and I think that is what we need to do in elected office. And that was something I really tried to do on any issue that I could.
Find an expert.
You know, find the people who are living this every day. They're the ones that know. See if you can bring them into committee in the legislature. You know, we used to, you know, please come down. That wasn't always a great experience for them. But, you know, that's what we need, you know, because, you know, you're thrown into these jobs representing a community, and so many issues come up that, of course, you know, you can't be an expert on everything. So that's when you rely on people who are doing this every day.
You know what fascinates me is all this stuff about the abortion and all these people have their own. Why are all these people practicing medicine without a license? That's what I want to know. All these politicians, Supreme Court people, you don't have a medical degree. Get out of everybody's business. Stop it.
Yes, it can go too far. It can go too far if politicians start jumping in and pretending like they are the experts.
Yeah,
when
they know
not.
It all.
They really need to be consulting with the experts.
Okay, we want to talk about the immigration and what's going on at the border.
Yes.
Now, did you go down to the border and get your picture taken?
I have been down to the border, but no, I'm not doing photo ops at the border.
Okay.
We see that way too much.
They pose in the walls behind
and
them.
And the walls behind them.
She didn't make me wear a cowboy hat for the commercial either. I just want to point that out. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I just feel like the border people, and, you know, we've got some great sheriffs that are on the border.
Absolutely.
Mark Daniels is awesome. Sheriff Wilmot in Yuma County is amazing. All you have to do is sit down and have a conversation with these people to find out what's going on and how can we help.
Yes, and Sheriff Daniels has been really generous with his time. A real shout out to him in terms of taking time with me and others to really talk about the situation, which is not good.
Yeah, it's not a good situation.
It is not good.
He's
it
a good person,
good.
But the situation is bad. So how do you plan on working with the border situation and making it right, if that's possible?
Well, I think we have to wake people up to, you know, what is going on at the border. And it's really helpful to have our, you know, sheriffs that are on the border, both Republican and Democrat, you know, current as well as former, can really talk about it. And the crisis that is going on. And, you know, my focus is, you know, I think we have to be very honest that, you know, neither political party has done a good job with this issue. You know, former President Trump, I have to say, you know, he separated families. You know, kids were in cages. President Biden was very late to the table on this to recognize how bad it had gotten. I do believe, and I've always said, you know, we need more resources. We need more resources for the law enforcement officers. And we need more asylum officers, immigration judges to process the migrants so that the law enforcement officers can do their job of battling the cartel-based violence of drug smuggling, human trafficking, which is just horrific. I did support that bipartisan border security deal because it really had it would have been a really big step forward in terms of providing those resources. It was a compromise. It was supported by the Border Patrol Union. It was negotiated by one of the most conservative senators in the Senate, as well as Kyrsten Sinema, an independent, and Chris Murphy, a Democrat. And Biden was ready to sign it. And I think what it would have done, John and I have talked about how it would have put 100 of those, fentanyl detection scanners into our ports of entry where we know that fentanyl is coming in.
Yes.
It would have had 100 asylum judges, thousands of asylum officers, more Border Patrol officers. This opportunity to be missed, to be rejected, frankly, by my opponent and others in the Republican caucus, just days after President Trump came out and very clearly said, I'm opposing this because I want to continue making the border a crisis to run on it for my political campaign.
What kind of person
I think that's
does
a travesty. That was a travesty. And it was a real travesty to Southern Arizona because, we are feeling the effects of this. And that's playing politics
Yes. And
over the community. So I'd like to return to that. I don't see how we're going to solve this and get something like that without making it a bipartisan deal.
After the election, will they bring it back?
We may not be able to get a deal like that, but we're going to have pieces of it that are both, securing the border and are also going to have some immigration reform measures in that as well. I think that's the only possibility of getting something passed. And so I'd like to work on that. I'd like to use the skills that I honed in that Arizona legislature, walking up and down the halls, getting, people across the aisle to sign my, co-sponsor my bills to try to get something done. Because I think that showed that we can get it done. And if we remove that political element, what we saw from President Trump getting in the middle of that, I think we would have had a deal. But it was caving to that political pressure that we've seen from President Trump, that trashed it.
Yeah, I was, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so I have a very, very good friend who's a supporter of Kyrsten's opponent. And we had lunch a couple of weeks ago. And again, I respect this guy in all ways, except for maybe some of his political decisions, because we're definitely opposed on most issues there. But this is what he said, because I think it's really representative of those folks that still believe he did the right thing by voting against that bill. He said, well, don't you realize that if he'd voted for that bill, that maybe it would have done good things for the border, but he would never have been reelected. I said, well, I do realize that. And there's a book called Profiles in Courage, and he will never get that award because that's exactly what he shouldn't have done. And that's why when I say he played politics, he's not going to be nominated for the Profiles in Courage Award. That was not a moment that I would be proud of.
He buckled.
Yeah, I think it's very real what my friend said. Yeah. He probably wouldn't have gotten elected. Because it is it's a razor thin margin there, and there are enough loyalists there who would eat their own in order to.
And we're not talking cats and dogs.
No,
here.
Not cats and dogs, but eat their own for not being loyal to the strongman. And to me, that is exactly the problem.
Yes.
And there are other issues that I disagree with him about, but that is an integrity issue. That is, he's not going to get the Profile and Courage Award, and so I haven't heard from my friend since I said that.
this district that I'm running for is, this is a swing district. I mean, this is, it's basically a third Republican, a third Democrat, a third independent. I mean, and people are looking for the representative to make some tough choices and, at the risk, potentially, of not being reelected. Ann Kirkpatrick, when she, I guess it wasn't this district, it was her district in Flagstaff, but she did hold this district later,
right.
But she was one of those elected officials who made hard choices. She voted for the Affordable Care Act, and it's widely considered that that's why she lost her seat in Flagstaff. She came down and then ran for this district and won, was reelected. And I think she showed kind of the integrity that Southern Arizonans expect in their elected officials, that, you know, they'll take the hard choices that they think are right, because it's right for the district and the people, as opposed to their political career. It's a yeah, 2-year job. You know, you got to run for it every 2 years.
Yeah, and you're working for the people. So, and I talk about it sometimes when Jim Kobe was alive. Mm-hmm. I ran into him at the airport, and he was going back to D.C., and he said he was going to vote. I can't remember what the law was, but I said, you don't sound happy about it. He said, well, it's not my idea. It's my constituents want me to vote this way. And I thought, hats off to you for not cramming your idea down everybody's throat. You're doing what your constituents want.
That's right.
And that's so rare.
And Sherry, I think a lot of people that get elected say, well, I'm here to serve all the voters in my district. That's
right.
Trite. I mean, yeah. Yes, of course they are. Everyone knows that. But I think the difference is some candidates don't slam the other party or people who don't agree with them on every issue. And those are the kinds of folks I've looked for and heard that absolutely from Kirsten, and that is, she needs Republicans, she needs independents, yep, and she needs Democrats. She needs all of that to win in that district. And so it's, you know, really refreshing to see there are people who don't say the partisan things to try to create chaos with the other group. This is not the Raiders versus the Rams. This is actually our lives. So fanatics, you
shoulder
know,
pins.
There's no room for that. There's no room for that kind of trash talk. It's being a problem solver that really cares about the outcome. And that's where I think a lot of people fail. And I think that's where Kirsten's a great candidate.
Why do you think only 26% of the voters who are registered voted in the primary? It just boggles my mind that people just, you know, they'll sit there and bitch and moan, but they don't go vote. And that is your voice.
It is really frustrating. I mean, Arizona has our primary in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
It's actually when families are taking their one, you know, week vacation during the summer. I think it's hurting us. It's hurting. By the time a candidate gets through that primary, it's kind of late, and there isn't that much time to really get to know all of the voters. They're spending a lot of their time working with their own party. So I would say, you know, the timing really should be moved up is what I would advocate. But
one of the questions I was going to ask you, but it was answered last night on the news. I was going to say, the astronauts are stuck in space. Mm. They missed the primary. They're going to miss the general election. Is anybody going to go up there with the ballot for these people?
They're mail-in ballot.
Actually, the astronaut said, we requested a ballot.
They'll figure it out.
I'm like, you know, okay. How are we going to do this?
They're astronauts. They can figure it out. Yes.
So we've got problems down in Santa Cruz County. I mean, gaping holes, the trucks coming through and everything. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about this equipment that can scan the trucks. Are they?
Well, it seems like that's how we've been finding a lot of these big loads of fentanyl pills.
Yeah.
Well, so there's no question about that, but I'll say those are very important. They do what they call secondary inspections, mm-hmm. and they'll send people that are suspicious to those places to get inspected. That equipment would be very valuable, and we do find a lot of drugs at the border that way. Body carriers as well, though. People mm-hmm. carry them inside their body. Those come through. But I think here's something people don't really understand. Marijuana, huge amounts of it in bales was coming across for 50 years in the middle of the desert. And so it made sense to try to interdict that in the desert when it was coming through. That's not where fentanyl's coming through. Not to say fentanyl won't move to the desert, but fentanyl's not in the desert right now. It's coming through the ports of entry. So that border bill would have actually staffed the improvements at the port of entry and probably even more importantly, dealt with what I don't mean to call people clutter, because they're not. They're human beings. But what they call clutter along the border, if you want to smuggle a lot of drugs in, you put it where there's a lot of people, and it's less likely it'll be interdicted.
That's right.
So by dealing with the asylum claims immediately and not allowing this mass of humanity to then, you know, be on either side of the border waiting for hearings or get sent interior to the United States, by dealing with that at the border when people show up, oh, you got an asylum claim? Well, let's hear it. letting them do that, and then rejecting, because most of them are rejected, but rejecting them because you have the staff the bill would have provided.
Right.
That is the that's the terrible part of this. But the vast majority of fentanyl comes right through the ports of entry. We have insufficient staff. We have insufficient technology. We know how to solve this. We haven't done what we needed to do to solve it because we were afraid of having you know, the strong man say that we are no longer Republicans or whatever. And so that's the tragedy of this, is the fentanyl that comes through now comes through because we chose not to do this.
Right.
Think of the number of months since then. It takes a long time to get these programs spun up. You know, the day on day one, I'm going to do whatever. Yeah, well, it's going to take you till day 368,000 before it's effective. So people need to understand that we lost all that time. And so, you know, people say, well, why are fentanyl deaths going down? It's killed a lot of people. And there are just fewer people. I mean, would you kill
hopefully
that many of your
education
customers?
Education. We're teaching people not to do this.
Right. And there's just no reason for it. So
absolutely.
Right. I mean, that's the other side of it is, and I know you've talked about that a lot, John, is just, you know, how we are, you know, there's kind of a giant sucking sound here, you know, into the U.S. And obviously we need to work on that, the other side here of, you know, what are we doing that is, you know, what are we, how are we not effectively teaching our kids and others, you know, not to get addicted to this stuff? So there isn't a market for it as well.
I had Sherry Oz on last week. She's the
DEA SAC, right, for Arizona.
And SAC means Special Agent in Charge,
right,
for Arizona.
Right.
And she was saying that she was amazed that parents don't teach their kids not to do drugs. They don't teach the little ones what fentanyl is and to stay away from, you know, candy, gummies, and things that people want to share. I'm appalled.
Well, that is the issue. So there's several parts of the drug problem, the first being prevention, and that is getting people education and prevention.
Right.
Keep people from starting. And then for those people who are already involved, that's the, what I call the pig and the snake. You got to deal with those folks by getting them
into
treatment.
Yeah.
And making it, it is very available, but making people aware that it's very available.
Yes.
And then you have to do this interdiction to make sure everybody doesn't get into the business of selling drugs, which is unfortunately one of the problems we have now. I mean, it's dispersed. The sale of fentanyl is dispersed to a much lower level than was ever done with other narcotics. So you have to have strong interdiction effort and enforcement effort. So any one of those things is missing or weak, we're where we are now. And so we need to work on all of that at the same time. Not at the expense of each other, all of those things. So.
Yeah, they all happen together. And we all need to work together on it. Teaching your kids is the most important part. Don't start.
Right, and it does seem like a lot of this is spread through social media. You
yes.
know?
They can buy their pills online, sitting on the sofa, buy whatever they want, have it delivered to the house.
It's all done that way now. I mean, it's not like it used to. You don't go to a bar to buy drugs. I hate to disappoint people of my generation. It just doesn't happen. It's all done with a text message or you know, one of the other social media apps. So
be happening right in front of you. You don't even know it.
Right.
So that's scary. What about the open primary Proposition 140? How do you feel about that? Okay. Right now, do you know what proposition?
I have to admit, I haven't taken a position on it. I certainly like the idea of mechanisms so that we don't have a system that just filters out the extremes, which is, I think, what our current primary system does. I like the idea of ranked choice voting, although I know that that's very complicated for folks.
I'm an independent. In order to vote, you know, now you do the mail-in thing, I have to declare which party I want to vote for. But if it was open, I could just have the ballot. Everybody could have the ballot, and you pick and choose who you want and send it back. And
yeah, that does seem to be one of the real benefits of it.
Yeah, that's. I think we all should vote for an open primary.
I have an opinion. I'm a huge believer in mail-in voting. I've always done it.
I love it.
It's a great thing. But I will say this, and I think this might benefit your candidacy here in that in some areas, people vote as families. They sit down at a kitchen table and they fill out their ballots.
They have a discussion.
Who does that hurt? And in my view, in a lot of cultures that I've been exposed to, that hurts the power of women voting. There's, you know, in some cultures, they are dominated by someone who has outsized influence in what their decisions will be. I think this time, because a lot of those people are going to go to the polls, a lot of those women are going to go to the polls and vote unsupervised. I mean that in a very strong way. I think that's going to be benefit, not just your candidacy, but across the board. I think we're going to get a much better view of how women on the right feel about issues when they're not supervised doing a mail-in ballot. Now, again, I'm all for mail-in ballots, but I don't think it was productive for the other side to argue against them.
When I first started voting, my husband told me who to vote for. And I said, yeah. I closed the curtain and did my own thing. But, you know, sure, dear. But, yeah, that I remember when, you know, you were told who to vote for. And do you remember that or no?
But, I mean, I think the larger issue is, you know, how important the vote is.
Yes.
How important it is that people understand this is your right. It is your decision. And that we enable them to become educated about, you know, what they're voting on, who they're voting on, and that we make it as easy as possible for those who are legally able to vote to vote.
Yeah, do your homework, do your research, and don't listen to the ads. There's a wonderful little gadget on your remote. It's called Mute. So turn it off. Don't listen to it. Or if you're listening, who's the sender? We do have a question. Did you want to take a question? Is this Ann has a question?
Sure.
Okay, we have a listener. Ann, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm trying to figure out who the candidate is here because I'm hearing the man speaking more than the actual candidate. And I'm wondering if she actually has a thought of her own to be able to put out there. And then my other comment was, I thought this was a non-political show. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. I believe I've been speaking quite a bit this morning, but happy to share more.
Just as far as I'm an enthusiastic supporter, I've been on the show more times than almost any other guest, I think. And so is it a non-political show? What in life is non-political truly? And so I think we do our best to point out, you know, what we think about the issues. And Ann, I recognize your voice, and I appreciate the fact that you called in to share all that with us. And thank you for calling. It was important to hear from you.
And we don't endorse candidates, but we do want to hear from them.
And I think we've been talking a lot about the fentanyl crisis and the border crisis and what we need to do to address that.
And I appreciate you taking the time to come here and talk to the listeners because they don't always get to go to these rallies or these town halls. And, you know, sometimes it's easier to just turn on the radio and say, hey, what do you have to say? I want to hear what your thoughts are.
And a lot of radio shows don't focus on law enforcement like yours does. So I really appreciate that.
And I'm so glad that you're not defunding the police like the ad said, because that had me a little concerned.
No, we are not in favor of defunding the police. No. And, you know, one thing that I talked about in the recent televised debate I had with my opponent, which, you know, like any victim of crime, I think I have kind of repressed. I don't talk about it a lot, is my own experience actually being a victim of crime. This was many years ago. I was assaulted on the street and grabbed and struggled. And I think back about, you know, what a wave of relief came over me as I saw that patrol car come around the corner.
Yeah.
And after I called 911, after I was lucky that, you know, I screamed for help and this guy actually dropped me. You know, you might repress some of those things, but you never forget them. And you never forget the importance of law enforcement and that's why we have them there.
Yeah, and thank God we've got some amazing law enforcement in Southern Arizona, and thank God for all of them. They do a great job. So
yeah, we do, yes. And it's been the honor of my life to work in law enforcement, and I can say that 40 years that I did that, I mean, and at least 10 year or 8 years on this show, I didn't talk politics at all because I was working then. I'm retired now, and I have the freedom. Actually, it is a very freeing experience to no longer be controlled by what the city council has to say or somebody else. So I very much enjoy the opportunity to have the freedom to talk about things I've always believed that I've been unable to talk about. So,
and, you know, we get a lot of retired people that come on from law enforcement who, okay, now I can talk about what I really feel. You know, and it's amazing to hear some of the stories. And I just want to say that, you know, on January and November 6th, we are doing a fundraiser. We have a retired ATF agent who's going to come in from the East Coast. I think he's coming in from Virginia. And he's going to tell us what really happened behind the scenes of the story, the Fast and Furious news story. And it's not what you think. It's absolutely not what you think.
Yeah, so. We touched some of those cases back when I was working, and you're right. There's a lot that people should learn about those kinds of things and about Fast and Furious in particular. Again, there's an awful lot of people who work every day trying to do the right thing in law enforcement, and God bless them for continuing the fight. It's and the support is it varies from time to time and person to person and candidate to candidate. So, you know, I got to say, we benefited from enormous support after 9/11, and it's been an arc over the course of my career. I told people when I retired that when I started in 1982, people waved at me with one finger when I drove by in a police car, and that was true again in 2022. But in between, we enjoyed tremendous support, and I know it can be there, and I know we get it from people on both sides of the aisle, and so I, you know, I think politics are the way you move forward. Things that are important to the community.
And those anniversaries, you know, we just had that anniversary of September 11th. And actually, I was in Massachusetts at that time when the attack occurred. But to think back on, you know, what happened, the incredible response by our first responders, you know, some of the difficulties that they have had. As a result of what they did, you know, putting their life on the line to help people, and you know, how important it is not only to support law enforcement in their active duty job, but also to take care of them afterwards. You know, police officers, our veterans, our firefighters, you know, that was a there was a lot we did in the Arizona legislature with respect to making sure that the, you know, the cancers that, that many of our firefighters develop as a result of their service, that we are taking care of them. So it's important to recognize, you know, that this is a commitment that we need to make in society.
To take care of each
other. Law enforcement isn't just their active duty, service duty. It is really their entire their life and their retirement as well, career.
And it's a rewarding job, but it can be very stressful too. And, you know, we hats off to them for doing what they do. And Alex here worked on the police department for a while and decided, hey, I need to go back to school. So he's a senior at the U of A.
Are you in the criminal justice program or...
No, I just used to be a police officer, but then I decided to go back to school. Right now I study urban planning and I minor in public relations as well.
Oh, okay.
So. Great. So he's learning.
Yeah.
And he's a good kid. I'd say kid.
Well, and the importance of education also in the criminal justice area, and a lot, you know, there are programs I know at the U of A, but our community colleges have taken up a lot of that. And I have been an advocate for, you know, supporting our community colleges because those law enforcement and public service, you know, certifications and careers that they launch are just so important to our community.
And there's a lot of agencies who, they have a law enforcement training program at Pima, and there's some mm-hmm. agencies who will pick up these people and then go through another training with, depending on the agency, with their particular thing. It's a great program. I think everybody should be.
It's a super program. I wish it had more widespread use, because I think what it allows someone to do is, rather than give up a career, so suppose you're 30 years old and you have a career where you're making money, but you decide you want to become a cop, you have to give that job up and join a police department and then potentially not make it through the academy because of an injury or something beyond your control. And now you can't go back to your original career as easily right. as you'd like. But if you do the Pima College program, mm-hmm. which has you know, been supported by the state legislature, mm-hmm. if you do the Pima College program, then you end up being able to make a choice about what career you want to do after you're licensed, essentially. And so it attracts people who are risk averse in favor of taking care of their family. It attracts, I think, a better quality candidate in the end. But it's not the primary path right now, and it'd be nice to see us move towards that, I think. You know, and I participated in that program at a couple of different levels, and I think it's a great program. So,
very cool. Apparently, it's not a program where you have to go like the academy. You have to go stay there, don't you?
Well, it's not residential necessarily, but it doesn't. It's not full time, so you'll do it over a period of time, and you'll be able to keep your job while you do it.
So one push up a week, and you can.
yeah, it's really ultimately a great way to do it.
Very cool. Okay, I think people need to know about that, too. Because I just learned about it recently. I was like, what do you mean? You can go to Pima College. Because I graduated from Pima College, too.
Oh, great.
So, as a paralegal, though.
Oh.
So, I'm not a law enforcement.
No, law matters. Yeah.
Law does matter. Law does matter. So, what is your plan? What's going on for you for the weekend?
Well, actually, we're now going up to... Casa Grande, and there's actually a Hispanic parade going on this morning. We actually, because of this, are missing being in the parade, although we understand we have some other volunteers that are carrying our banner, but we're going to go straight from here up to there to man a table because they have a whole Hispanic sort of festival going on up there. And, you know, I think that you know, one thing to say is, you know, this is a very large, diverse district, and yes. It's something like 784 square miles. The northern edge really is that Casa Grande community. And then, of course, we know it goes all the way down to the border. So today we're spending our time up there. Then later this afternoon, we're actually going up to LD7, which is, which is more in the northeastern area of the district scheduled. Yeah, so we've got a lot to do today.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and
thank you
explaining to us that, you know, you're not defunding the police.
No.
You're actually supporting them, and I appreciate that. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few.
Thank you so much.
This is Sherry. On November 6th, we are hosting a presentation by retired ATF Special Agent Forcelli on what really happened inside the Fast and Furious news story. This is the history you won't hear anywhere else, and every ticket gets a copy of his book, The Deadly Path. Holidays are coming, and this would make a great gift. Go to lawmatters1030.org for more information and event tickets. Tune in every Saturday morning at 8 because law matters.
If we want change, more than 30% of Pima County needs to vote. This is JL, reminding you, we can't hear your voice if you don't use it. Please vote and vote early.
Hi, this is Sherry. We should all be very grateful for our military. Without them, we would not be a free country. And 150 words or less, tell us about your favorite veteran for a chance to win a day of recognition. Be honored in the Veterans Day Parade, receive a gift basket, and be interviewed on the Law Matters radio show. For contest details, go to lawmatters1030.org website and tune in every Saturday morning at 8 because law matters. Tucson, more than 26% of us need to vote if you want positive change. We need people who aren't being manipulated by someone else's agenda or think their gender is a qualifying factor. Research the resumes of those who are running, sitting in an office for decades, and taking online classes does not prepare you for these positions. Over and above college degrees, continued training, street smarts, and field experience, honesty and integrity matters. Get informed and please vote. Hi, this is Sherry. On November 6th, we are hosting a presentation by retired ATF Special Agent Forselli on what really happened inside the Fast and Furious news story. This is the history you won't hear anywhere else, and every ticket gets a copy of his book, The Deadly Path. Holidays are coming, and this would make a great gift. Go to lawmatters1030.org for more information and event tickets. Tune in every Saturday morning at 8 because law matters. Thanks for staying with us. That was Kirsten Engel, and she's a candidate, and I appreciate her telling us where she stands on some of the issues. And on the phone is Hal Kempfer. Hal, thank you so much for hanging in there.
No, it was an interesting discussion. Thanks for having me on.
So we were going to have an update on what's going on. I understand that Putin has decided if you're going to help people with weapons that he's declaring war or something. What's going on?
Well, Putin, the big thing right now is that we have the U.S., Britain, France has these longer range missiles like what's called the Storm Shadow cruise missile. There's a French equivalent called the Scalp. And then there's these longer range ATACMS. That's a U.S. Army long range tactical missile system, or longer range, I should say. And the discussion has been for some time, and certainly the request from President Zelensky in Ukraine has been, hey, let us use these weapons to hit further and deeper into Russia. They've been using them with great effect in Crimea on the peninsula because they have so much range, but there's been some still restrictions on how they can use them. And so that is an ongoing discussion. There was a little bit of anticipation yesterday that maybe with Prime Minister Starmer being in D.C. meeting with President Biden that they might do a joint thing, but they didn't do it. So that's been the big discussion. Of course, Putin came back and says, hey, if you cross that line, big time nuclear saber rattling. Medvedev, who used to be the president, who's head of the Security Council this morning, came out and said that I think the term he used was that Kyiv would melt down. I thought that was rather an interesting term, kind of inferring that if they did that, that they might nuke Kyiv, the capital city of Ukraine. So a lot of embellished rhetoric coming out of the Russians. Not surprisingly, that's kind of what they do when they do nuclear saber rattling all the time. Now, the interesting thing is Ukraine, as of Thursday, and it's been very quiet, apparently Ukraine opened up another little front in the Kursk Oblast, about 20 miles west of its current salient, if you will, that's up there. So they apparently went into another part of the border, headed north. No one's really sure if they're how far they got exactly, or whether they've stayed up north or whatever. It's very unclear on the ground exactly where they are, except that it's very clear that they busted through the Russian lines and they went up into another location, which kind of threw the Russians a little off balance. Now, the Russians launched a counterattack in Kursk, but there's no indication they're making much headway. But they did launch a counterattack, and so that's going on. And I should mention on the Eastern Front in the Donbas area, the Russians are still pressing. It is really unclear if they're making much headway, though. They are making some incremental gains on the battlefield. There are discussions of certain Ukrainian units getting pressure and feeling that they could get cut off if the Russians continue. But then again, you also hear from General Sirsky, the head of the armed forces, saying the Russians aren't doing that much. And the Russians are going to be in a lot of pressure to move forces up north to get them up into Kursk, because if the Ukrainians keep making gains in Kursk, at some point they're going to have to put some of the better combat formations up there. Now, if you want to go down to Israel, some of the things there really isn't a whole lot happening on the ceasefire negotiations right now. There was a story this week that there had been an offer tendered that if Yahya Sinwar, the head of Hamas, was to leave Gaza, they believe they would allow him to leave Gaza, he and his family, in exchange for releasing all the hostages and a bunch of other things. That appears to have gotten nowhere, but it was kind of an interesting story that was out there for a while that Israel had said that they would allow him to leave in exchange for basically Hamas capitulating, him surrendering Hamas. But apparently nothing's happening there. A couple of interesting things, though. The Israelis did a report earlier in the week around Monday. They did an airstrike up in Syria. And it was at a facility that had been reputed to be involved with, like, chemical weapons production. Turns out it wasn't just an airstrike. Yeah, there was an airstrike, but it was a facility that makes long-range missiles. And so they had gone in with airstrikes, and they put commandos. They put troops on the ground who went in there and fixed munitions and also basically raided the place for all the intelligence they could possibly get. And once they got him out, then they went in and hit him with an airstrike again, which is a very common raid methodology. It's to let them know you really care. And so they got a lot of good intelligence out of it as well. And then the U.S., working with the Iraqis, did a series of raids in Iraq on ISIS and apparently killed a number of ISIS, about 14 ISIS personnel, but four of them were key ISIS leaders. And a little reminder that ISIS is not gone. All right. They no longer control that big territory, but they're not gone. A little reminder to the Iraqis, the Iraqi government, that's why the U.S. is there, to deal with ISIS. So there's just been a lot of things going on. Oh, and I should mention, I would be remiss. China has said they're going to force the Philippines out of the West Philippine Sea, essentially, out of a key shoal that's out there. And so everyone's paying attention to that. I understand 60 Minutes is actually doing a thing on tomorrow night. So I'm kind of curious to see what they're looking at, the Philippine-China standoff going out there. And because you were talking drugs, I will mention that the Royal Navy, along with the U.S., intercepted a semi-submersible in the Caribbean and seized about 2,000 kilograms of cocaine that were being smuggled.
Ooh, wow.
And a very successful operation. And by the way, those things don't get a lot of publicity, but it is amazing, some of these maritime interdictions that are going on and interdicting these semi-submersibles that are very difficult to detect because they sit so low in the water. And this one is actually painted blue to kind of blend in, make it difficult to see. But they tracked it. They got it. I don't know the details of how they found it, but I could guess. But rather impressive. And, of course, when you get a haul of 2,000 kilograms of cocaine, that's a pretty big seizure. So
yeah, it is.
Anyway, a lot of things going on around the world. Yeah.
And how we only have 2 minutes left, but we have the former counter-narcotics officer here, commander here, John Lovett. Mm-hmm. And what do you think about that seizure?
Well, all those seizures are important. And, I always keep in the back of my head that to Tucson, Arizona, the Border Patrol section here is where 51% of all the drugs that enter the United States come through, meaning more than the rest of the American border combined. So those seizures everywhere else are really important, and we have to keep our eye on those, and those are great. But, man, the number and the amount and the weight and the death that comes across the border in Arizona is huge, and that's why it's so important that we pass some legislation to actually help deal with this issue.
Is there any legislation that we should be voting on?
Well, I mean, I think it was offered and refused, and I don't know that they'll ever get together with that kind of bill again. It was very aggressive.
It was an aggressive bill, and right. I just really right. feel bad that they couldn't see beyond their political
that was hard.
Ideology.
That's hard.
That's too bad. So what are you doing this weekend, Hal?
Oh, this weekend? Actually, I got a few news hits this weekend. I'm on Fox Live Now this afternoon, and then News Nation tomorrow. And I'll be doing a few things, but kind of working around some of these news hits, talking about, a lot of about Israel, some about Ukraine, but talking about that. By the way, as you know, I'm a former zoni. I worked with the military counter-drug effort for years back in the 90s and may have spent a bit of time down the border with Arizona. And surprisingly, for some reason, I'm still trying to figure out, not a lot of maritime interdictions along the Arizona-Mexico border.
Why is that?
I'd be curious.
Although oddly,
we do get a
briefing at intel briefing from the Coast Guard on a regular basis, and it's very helpful because the Coast Guard actually tracks stuff from South America. It's great.
Yeah, it is good.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I want to thank you, Hal, for hanging in there with me, and I appreciate Kirsten for coming on and John for being here and Alex and John in the control room. And until next week, shop local and stay safe.